Knock, knock.
Who's there?
It's me. It's Dan.
Oh. Could it perhaps be the Daniels?
I guess. If I were smarter, I would have said, yeah, something like that. Plural of me, because they're, you know, between me and them, there are many people.
Uh-huh.
With that similar name.
Yeah, well, I mean, but they go by Daniels, and you go by Dan, so you have to find another Dan.
I don't want to be a Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Although some part of me feels like, I mean, you have generally a shortened version of your full name. Do you ever feel like, I'm an adult now, maybe I should go by my longer name to add some gravitas to my personality?
Well, see, it was the reverse of that. When I was a kid, I went by Joseph in a lot of places.
Oh, and yeah, same. Yeah, I was Daniel as a child.
Yeah, because part of the problem was I absolutely hated when people would call me Joey. And the way you deter Joey is you insist on Joseph. Because then they're
interesting. I loathed Danny, but only one person ever called me that, primarily because there were several other Dannys in close proximity. So I think they used me as a Daniel to tell the difference between them.
Ah, Dan by proxy. Danny by proxy.
Yeah. You needed to surround yourself with more Joeys. Mm-hmm. And then you would have been separated out as a non-Joey.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. It was hard to come by at the time, other Joes.
we had one Joseph, and we had to share it.
We were, back in my day, we were dying breed. There were so few of us. I don't know. Because there weren't that many Joes. And then for some reason, in the last few years, I've worked on several projects where there have been multiple Joes, and to hell with that. I don't need that energy in my life of everyone going Joe, and then I have to like turn around and be like, what, you mean me? Where they write it out in a chat room, and then you're like, what, do you mean me? And then you got to see typing dot, 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 and then you figure it out from there.
So have you begun to go by Joseph?
No.
No. Oh.
So there are also those two. But
you're going to battle to the death with all of the other.
No, I mean, but I respond to either, but just usually nobody calls me Joseph. In my IMDb credits, which is a very important page for me, that's Joseph in my professional
top
credits.
Top link on your LinkedIn page.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're looking for me for professional work, don't. But also, it's Joseph. So, you know, consider that.
He doesn't need your work or your pity.
No. I have too much work and too much pity. But speaking of work and pity,
what a transition.
Yeah, we had intended to talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once for quite a long time. And it just kept falling through the cracks because it was in theaters and I saw it in a theater, but Dan couldn't make it. And then Dan had a baby and it was on home video, but then I was like, yeah, this is not really like the time to watch it when you're not sleeping for more than 4 hours.
I've seen like three movies since the baby has been around, and I think all of them have been on this podcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, I mostly see movies for this podcast too, and my rate of seeing movies has been substantially reduced by your lack of availability.
You know, you can just lie to the people in your life and be like, I got a podcast about a movie that I feel like watching and just like pretend for a little while.
Yeah, I guess.
At least when we don't actually record. That would be one way, thing to do. Has anyone done that yet where they're like a podcaster whose podcast ends, but they don't want to tell their significant other because they still want that like hour and a half of alone time once a week?
Well, that's a spec script waiting to happen, Dan.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's going to get so much praise on the blacklist.
Yeah. It doesn't really work for me to say that I'm watching it for the podcast, because then I'd also have to like come up to the ADU and just sit here for like an hour and a half.
What's wrong with that? Just go stare at a wall for an hour.
Okay. Yeah, I could use the me time.
Exactly.
It's called
self-care.
But I'm glad you were able to sleep so that you could watch the movie again, because it's not that short. But I mean, it goes by at a pretty brisk pace, but it is not short. It's not rather time consuming, which is another reason not to do it when you can't sleep.
I squinted at it, confused, and taking it all in yesterday evening.
Did all of my hemming and hawing about like the right conditions under which to subject you to this, did any of that make sense afterwards? Why I was so tightly wound about it? Or were you like, calm down?
You'll have to remind me what the hemming and hawing was.
Well, just that I wanted you to be under ideal conditions, you know, like a shuttle under launch or something. Conditions,
yes. It has to be a sunny day in the in the fall. It's an important movie to be able to pay attention to, because whilst I tend to offer to share the viewing experience with anyone else who might be in the room with me, when they have not looked up from their phone in the first 5 minutes, I know that it's lost on them, because, you know, the beginning of this movie is, well, like 70% subtitles with some English mixed in, and then a lot of running around, a lot of setup for later payoffs that if you're not paying attention, I mean, the movie's already chaos and crazy all over the place. So if you miss any of that setup, you're just like, why is any of this happening?
Yeah, this is not the kind of thing you can just like have on in the background and dip in and out of. It's not a Law and Order episode.
No.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty dense. In, like you said, exposition at the beginning, it's very, it loads you up with all that. But then it also just keeps coming.
This is also one of those ones that, like, the themes are fairly understandable and human and sort of generalized. They're just presented in an extremely weird way that, I mean, there's probably a way you could watch this movie. I don't know how you would have to time, like, when you enter and exit the room, but there's probably a way to understand the actual, you know, the mood and the vibe of the movie without seeing all of the craziness.
I mean, I guess, but I feel like the craziness is the point, because it is, like you said, themes wise, you know, parents understanding their kids, you know, generational stuff, you know, that kind of thing. It's not, they're not the first people to do that in a film. Also, you know, issues of, you know, immigrant families where they put a lot of pressure on their kids, and that story is also not uncommon. So there's a familiarity to it, but at the same time, all of the weirdness helps you digest and understand all of the themes, I think, because it all works with it in terms of if you could be anything, then why would anything matter? So then you get like this, the nihilism and stuff, and like trying to understand your daughter through it and admitting that, you know, maybe you don't connect with them because of all this other stuff, but you have to explore it through all these other choices that could have been made in these other realities.
Yeah. And it's intertwined and balanced in such a way where it's like, which one is the subplot? Is the family the subplot, or is the extremely weird multiverse stuff the subplot of the family? Which, that's not a thing that you've probably ever said before about a movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that family is the plot, but the mechanisms that allow you to do the family stuff are fairly specific and unique. And I know that for some people, they might hear like, oh, multiverse stuff, like everybody's doing multiverse stuff. But I find that their approach to it in this situation is unique enough in the way that they chose to explore these alternative realities, which are unreal, you know, to a wild degree.
Yeah, I mean,
was it just weird, or were you like, oh yeah, that makes sense that we're getting there from there?
I mean, eating a tube of chapstick to jump between a multiverse, I don't know that that's ever going to make sense.
No.
But it's, I don't know, there's the way that they start the movie with that sort of like daily life chaos of being pulled in a bunch of different directions simultaneously, and it's all fairly important and kind of serious stuff. And then that turns into like you're being pulled between like a kung fu battle in the multiverse and your husband serving you divorce papers is it's weirdly like they managed to match the tone between those two sorts of settings and scenes, but like they couldn't be further from mm-hmm. each other really. But like I guess they sort of validate each other in that weird way where you've already got this sort of like stressful heightened environment from the very beginning, and then like, you know, what else could go wrong, right up to and including, you know, your husband is possessed by a version of him from a different universe. I mean, it all worked. Like it all flowed from one to the next, and you're never really sort of, you're not stepping back going like, wait a minute, that doesn't work with the logic of this weird world that they set up. It all fits together cohesively, but it is all very insane.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make the case that this is like normal stuff happening. I mean, because the movie's also like bending filmmaking genres inside of it, in terms of like the multiverse seems to contain the way that the movie is also directed. And that is an interesting and bold choice that I am fully on board with. If you told me that you were just going to be pivoting from one sort of tone to another, like, you know, martial arts, the like fantasy-ish kind of like super I don't know how to say it, super like super powered basically performances, like wire work, all that, to go from that to like reserve family stuff and moments and things, to wedge it all together and still make it make sense without it like being laughable when you're in the other scene in an unintentionally laughable way, not like,
yeah, and you know, pinatas and crayon drawings in there too. Like it's, yeah, there's, you got all of it. I mean, I did have a moment or two where I had to step back and go like, was the person, like I guess the team writing this particular scene, were they just extremely stoned and going like, okay, you're in an office, what could you do that would be super weird to help you verse jump? It's like, well, you could eat gum off the bottom of a table, you could. She swallow a frog toy, or was that an actual frog at one point?
It was a frog figurine.
Frog figurine.
Or like, yes, paperweight, well, I guess, but it was just like a small, non-moving, frog-shaped object.
Sure, of course. You've got the, I don't think it was part of the verse jumping, but the stapling, the drawing of the bagel to their foreheads, mm-hmm. Was interesting. You know, they had to have had some fun with the whole, like, what extremely random crap could we throw in here that would be verse jumping things.
Yeah, I mean, should we just get right to the pinnacle?
Oh sure, I wasn't even leading us there, but we did get there. Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, well, you always get there in the end.
You always get it in the end is what you mean.
Yes. But yeah, so one of the things that we see early on in this is that Jamie Lee Curtis's IRS agent character has won Auditor of the Year awards, which is three of them on her desk, and we see them quite clearly, and they are butt plugs. And then later on in the film,
I choose to believe that is more of a commentary about the IRS than, you know, anything else.
I mean, I think that is generally the joke they were making, but then there's
and yet they set it up to be
literal, and they do that a few times in this film where you don't expect like something that is just sort of like tee hee hee, like a moment, you know, like seeing these butt plugs, you don't expect it to be a situation where two actors are trying to fight to put the butt plug up their butt in order to have superpowers to fight someone else.
Yeah. And then the way the two are fighting over it, and then player three comes jumping out of nowhere in extreme slow motion, ass first at the butt plug. Wow.
Yeah. And just how it's filmed too. Like his pants are off. They digitize, like, you know, did the little digitization mosaic. Yeah. He's up in the air in slow-mo, lands on it. In the opposite view we cut to, you see a puff of dust or smoke, oh, well, dust probably, go up into the air as he exhales from landing on this butt plug in slow motion from hit the leaping across probably what was it 12 feet so yeah, that was an achievement.
If he would have done that in real life, he would have had the bass in there as well.
Well, that was also the funny part, because then they proceed to battle where he has the butt plug hanging out of his butt. And they, you know, of course, it's just the appliance they put on it and stuff. But then they get to use that as shorthand, just in case you thought they were done, to have the other guy who has a different kind of trophy, just like a regular, like one of those sports trophies where they got the like shiny metallic cylinder part. He has that up his butt. And then you're like, well, they're definitely just not going to go anywhere else with that. In slow motion, as Michelle Yeoh is spiraling out of the way of one corkscrewing towards her in slow motion and one sliding under her in slow motion, she grabs and removes both of those from their butts. If you had told me, like, in a written description that that would be in this movie, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, that's what I, you know... I want to understand what the production process was like. Maybe it's kind of an indie and it was done in a different way, because like you couldn't possibly describe this movie to somebody in pre-production and have them go like, oh yeah, thumbs up, let's do that.
Well, I mean, they did describe it in pre-production, because they, you know, have this produced by the Russo brothers. And Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert, they didn't have a ton of credits before this. I haven't seen their other major film that they did, the one with Radcliffe in it.
Which one is that? The weird one?
Swiss Army Man.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. But
friend of the show, Rye's favorite movie.
Really?
Oh, he wouldn't stop talking about it for weeks.
Oh, well, now I kind of don't want to watch it.
Wow. Spite. I have not seen it either, but it also seemed extremely odd.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even remember anything about the previews for that. But for this one, I remember the previews for it, and I was thinking, wow, it's mainly interesting because of the star power of Michelle Yeoh, and like you see a couple of the action set pieces in it, just like in brief clips that don't really make any sense, and you hear the multiverse pitch, and it's like, well, that's interesting. And it had rave reviews, saw it in theaters, I couldn't stop talking about it, I wouldn't shut up. And it's hard because on the one hand, you don't want to spoil it by saying what it is that's so funny or weird about it, but how do you prepare someone for there's a butt plug scene where someone is fighting to put a butt plug into their butt?
How do you help gently guide somebody to this movie and discuss, like, figure out whether or not they are the right audience for this or not?
Yeah, it's like, so there's butt plugs, and then there's also generational family trauma of not loving and understanding your child. And it's like, those two things are here, both of them. There's
also a bagel that's a black hole.
A bagel that's a black hole. When everything's on a bagel, you can destroy reality anytime.
Also, they do Ratatouille with a raccoon.
That's the best. I love that. That was the other thing I was gonna when we talked about like little throwaway moments of like seeing the butt plug trophy, when they have their moment cracking up laughing at her for not remembering Ratatouille and for insisting that it was a raccoon. And she's very insistent about it, but both her daughter and her husband are just cracking up at her about it. You don't expect the movie to, in a few moments later, a few beats later, to have her verse jump to a reality where there is Rakakuni, where she is a chef in a teppanyaki restaurant, and Harry Shum Jr. is also a chef in the same teppanyaki restaurant, and he has a little raccoon tail sticking out from underneath his chef's hat. And then later on, she sees him without the chef's hat on, and the talking raccoon, speaking in Randy Newman's voice, says that he needs to kill her because there can't be any witnesses. So it's just, it's again, how do you prepare someone? And you're just like, so there's heartfelt, tender moments. Also, there's a raccoon puppet the chef thing take on Ratatouille. Like, it doesn't even make any sense, like, just writing that down. So I don't know, but at the same time, it's just like, it's so fascinating to me, just like the absolute weirdness that needs to be going on in not just one person's brain, but two people's brains, in order to make this happen. Because I could see a very boring version of this movie where it doesn't fully live up to potential of being weird. But this movie is like, you know what? It's going to be, they're not even saying multiverse of madness, but they're giving us a multiverse of madness. Whereas the movie that gave us a multiverse of madness did not give us a multiverse of madness. It was a very reserved film in comparison.
It's a literal catch 22. You know, if you call yourself a multiverse of madness, you're not. If you don't, you are.
I don't know. It's cute and charming and fun.
The creepy old guy's character's name was Biff Whiff. Wow.
Well.
Oh, I guess with the, you know, the sniffing of the perfume, I guess.
Yeah, everybody had fun names, like Dietra Babidra, the IRS inspector.
Oh, that guy's real name is Biff Whiff.
Wait, what?
I was looking at this backwards. His character's name is Rick. Biff Whiff. It's got to be a stage name, right?
I mean, I hope so. Do you think they were just like, well, we know one person who's perfect for this perfume role. His name is Biff Whiff.
Biff Whiff.
Okay. Weird.
Biff Whiff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But speaking of casting, Michelle Yeoh, star power. Ki Kwan, who plays Wayman Wong, he has not done any acting between the years of 2002 and 2021, or whatever, because they filmed this 2020. They stopped production and then they had to do a couple of scenes, like when they're in the van talking to each other. Apparently that was all comped together of Michelle Yeoh. She was like in Paris or something when they filmed her side of that scene. But you know, he hasn't done anything in a long time, and he's of course most known for being Short Round in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, a movie I don't particularly enjoy. But it was good to see him here, and it was perfect casting for him. James Hong, in his 500,000th role, is in this movie.
I very much enjoyed seeing Jenny Slate in there, mostly just because when she does her multiverse turn into a bad guy. I laughed a lot at her, whatever you call that weapon on a string thing that she does with her dog.
Pomeranian, yeah.
Yes. And as it goes flying, and she cuts the leash, and the dog just goes flying off the set. That was very good.
The dog that was very obviously a stuffed animal in all of the other shots of it swinging around. Yeah, she was good for that moment. And then Jamie Lee Curtis, of course, as Dietra Babidra. And it was actually a more complex role than I had initially assumed from the beginning of the movie, where I just thought she was going to be the version of evil that would be chasing her around, was going to be her. Little did I know that she is the evil that still can be loved, especially when she has hot dog fingers.
The hot dog fingers. Part of me wants to know where the mustard came from, but at the other part of me just really doesn't want to know where the mustard came
from. Well, I mean, and it's so weird too, because it's in the whatever that musical drama is that she watches in the laundromat. The
Bollywood thing that they've got going on there. Yeah, they have ketchup and mustard on their hot dog fingers also.
Yeah, but I don't know, but I did, of course, enjoy the riff on 2001, A Space Odyssey, where they were explaining that there is a divergence where the hot dog finger apes beat up the not hot dog finger apes. And they have like that weird, like wonky kazoo noise version of Spock Zarathustra playing while they're like waving their little fingers around. So, yeah.
Imagine the model scene from 2001, except the apes have hot dog fingers and they're beating the crap out of another.
It's Ape. so good. And it is he's so weird. And again, you thought they would just be like, well, there's a universe with hot dog fingers. That's the joke. And then they're like, nope. It's a universe of hot dog fingers. Everyone can be loved. Also, they're really good with their feet. Wink, wink. And they... Jeez. They can use that to do the stuff at the end of the movie, and it's all incorporated in every act of it. And it's just like, wow, like why did you decide that? I don't know.
They managed to make it so weird and seemingly random, and then tie those things in a way that makes them feel not random. It is absurd the way, like even the smallest like connection to part of the story is enough for us to go, oh, you guys thought this through and you really like put in the work. It's not just weird for weird's sake. I mean, it is, but then they did the extra work to make it actually connect. It's baffling.
Yeah. And you know, it evidently took them a lot longer than many other kinds of film projects because they had been, yeah, toying with these ideas for many years. And it wasn't until like they watched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse in 2018 that they were like, oh crap, we got to actually make this. Because everybody's making multiverse movies now and our stuff is not going to be original. So it's interesting to see that they'd just been thinking of all these ideas, but I have no idea the order of operations that occurs where you're just like, okay, well, this is the movie and now we need weird things to put into the movie. Like, do you have, what vision of it do you have before you're just like, and then this is the hot dog finger part that's going to tie in several times. Like, do you know how you're going to carry it through when you're making these choices? Or is it something that they came out of the process with when they were iterating on making this film, because it was also in post for a long time because of COVID?
It's incredible that they were able to stick to their guns so hard. Like, you know, when you get into post, the inclination is to cut everything that doesn't work. And if you don't commit so hard into like, no, this is not a throwaway bit, we have to come back to it to make it like stick. Like, I don't know how you have the confidence to say, okay, we're going to come back to hot dog fingers yet again to show this one more time from a different perspective, because we're seeing the same theme from every different angle. Like, how do they not go, oh, well, okay, we showed the hot dog fingers once and everyone LOL'd and then like we can move past the hot dog fingers. You know, they must have had a big sign up on the wall or something with some mantra that says like, no, we don't give up on these ideas. You know, we come back to the hot dog fingers every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've never been in the position of trying to develop a film before, so I have no idea. But they're also from like a short film music video kind of background-ish thing. So I don't know if any of this was satisfying for you to watch and be like, wow, look at them like Michel Gondry their way through this, but like in a good way.
I mean, at some point we have to talk about the fact that there are 7 VFX artists on this movie. 7.
Yeah.
Didn't miss a decimal point there.
No.
7.
Those poor guys.
For the whole movie. One of whom is a guy I actually work with fairly often, which is extremely weird. 7 for, like the number of stunt players is easily 4 times that.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting because when they had initially talked about it, I'm trying to remember this. It's not something I'm reading at the moment, but they had said something like they had gone to vendors to get them to do stuff, but they couldn't get them to do this stuff the way they wanted or as weird as they wanted. And so they instead decided that their weird self-taught team of 7 people would somehow do it, just because they like could chill on the same vibe or whatever. So
it's a lot of they did a larger amount of iteration, I think, than most people would typically do. That's kind of the sense I got.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of the breakdowns that they have put out. Like, there's the one of Daniel Kwan's face being ripped apart by the bagel at the end of the film, And there were, you know, these multiple layers where they like cut out and iterated on it, like how it should tear apart and what it should do, and like iterating on what the bagel should look like and stuff like that. And it just is interesting to me because it feels a little more concentrated in terms of the creativity rather than diluted, because they're not repeating stuff often. And many of these shots are kind of like one time things.
Right. You're kind of saying it's more like an older style of filmmaking where they limit their usage of VFX. So not every shot has is 50% VFX. They've got whatever, like a third of the movie is, you know, really heavy on the shots.
Well, also, I think people forget, and I should underscore this. You should all remember this. Editing is also a visual effect. So when you have a scene like when Jojo Tupaki first shows up and she's confronting that security guard and she touches him, the lights go crazy and stuff, and then he vomits confetti. He vomits confetti and then he explodes. And so you're like, well, you can cut to that part. And then when they are pinatas later in the film, and they go out of being pinatas to cut from that to the other scene, they have a bunch of pieces of the tissue paper stuff fly in the air as Michelle Yeoh moves backwards in the same direction that the thing had been going. And there's no visual effect in that shot other than editing from one to the other. And so you get the sense that a transformation has occurred while they were just like, clip, put them together, that's it.
You don't think they put a little bit of that confetti in there in post? You think somebody, there was a script supervisor going, wait, hang on, guys, we're cutting from pinata verse to this particular shot here. We need to throw some confetti in the air when we say action.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed very planned because I think they had an idea. I haven't seen anything about storyboards or anything, but they seem to have an idea of how they want the seam, where they wanted the seams. Because it's hard to, you couldn't just like, I think, in post tease all of these connections out, because if you're like cutting as Michelle Yeoh turns her head a certain direction, then you need to make sure you've filmed her turning her head that direction in the other scene. When she's like having her disorientation and jumping, or sort of going back and forth between different realities, she's often, you know, convulsing in a particular direction and they cut to that convulsion in the other direction. So it is definitely something that they needed to have planned, at least in terms of like writing something down, for what they had filmed in the other shot.
Yeah. Just like, knowing though just how much work is done in editing to sort of like find the connections of things, it's a miracle the way this thing came together for those particular types of scenes.
Well, also just a miracle in terms of managing the assets that you were ingesting for this, because I have no idea what the like premiere or Final Cut project for this looks like, but I imagine it is an absolute disaster because there are many shots in this film that are just like a couple frames as we're like going between multiple realities, and you're having to manage all of that and also slide and adjust the in and out points in order to get Michelle Yeoh's face in the center of the screen to match the two other frame shot that you're going to cut to. So it is just a lot of work for the editor in a data management side of things, and trying to like turn a library of fragments into a cohesive whole. So kudos to whoever that was. I could look them up, but I don't have the information in front of me.
A cohesive whole, like the center of a bagel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's the other kind of whole,
like the award hole,
like with the band.
Oh, okay.
not a huge Hole fan.
Courtney Love.
Mm-hmm.
They had a couple of those songs back when we were younger. They were popular.
They sure did.
Wasn't one of them like the theme song of like a Real World show or something? It was definitely in some of those, you know, not another teen movie type movies.
Oh, yeah, probably. So edited by Paul Rogers, who doesn't have a page for some reason. Interesting.
Wow, Paul Rogers. Mm-hmm. What are you doing to us here?
Yeah. I liked how the movie was shot. I don't know how you felt about that process, but it was pretty to look at. And they weaved in between all the different genres and references they were making, I thought, pretty well. Do you care for the aspect ratio changing?
There was, in one of the various fast-cutting montages of her flying through stuff or something, they were cutting, like, it was just what her... actress Kung Fu universe, maybe, that was like super letterbox, and you would sort of see that intercut with the other ones. So it was kind of crazy and cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you like wide angle lenses, so you must have been happy with that too.
I don't have an opinion on wide angle lenses.
is that your official like statement to the court? Shall the court report you back to you
on wide angle lenses? There's an Intel commercial going around right now where it's all shot with extremely wide angle lenses, very close to people's faces, and it's too wide and too close to people's face.
Okay. All right, Goldilocks.
Back up. Yeah. This porridge is just right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the DP's background here. You got a lot of music video, short film type things in here.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think that's how they knew him, because they also, he did a Swiss Army Man for him too.
Massive Attack. Wow. It does a disservice to say that this movie is sort of a compilation or a hodgepodge of other styles that sort of are used to tell the different types of stories and different multiverse stories here, because it does feel of its own style most of the time. And, you know, it does have sort of an indie feel. I mean, maybe part of that is just this sort of like, you know, dirty laundromat that is the center of a lot of it too. But, it's, you know, it doesn't feel like it's mimicking anything in particular.
No, well, the scenes where she's a successful actress and she meets up with, Waymond, who is a successful, whatever he is, I forget. And they're
businessman, of course.
Businessman, successful businessman. And they are in that alley with the green lights. People are moving in, not slow motion. What is it? It's double printed kind of thing going on with the long shutter.
Yeah, it's stroby. It's like a 6x6 or something, like shoot 6, print 6 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You get the streaks from the long shutter for that too.
Yeah, that was a very interesting choice. That's something I haven't seen in a very long time.
Well, that's because it was referencing Wong Kar Wai and In the Mood for Love, which is a movie I've tried to watch and I appreciate moments of, but I've never actually been in the mood for The Mood for Love, I guess, as like watching the whole thing all the way through. So that's kind of like bad on me, I guess.
The Mood for Love, mm-hmm. 2000 is what this says. While I kill time, while my web browser attempts to load. Okay. In the Mood for Love. I don't know what this is at all.
You don't need to watch it right now or anything. It's fine.
Well. Yeah, just I'm gonna just you hang on for an hour and I'll watch this.
Just put on some elevator hold music.
Hour 38. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know what this is. What was the other one that you said that it was mimicking?
Oh, that's what I said. Wong Kar Wai was the director.
Oh. I thought you were saying, yeah. You said there were a couple movie references.
Oh, well, I mean, I can't say other than the 2001 reference.
Yeah.
That I recognize anything else as being a reference, because the Rakakuni thing references, but is not visually the same. They didn't have like a 3D animated version of Rakakuni, which I think would have been oddly perfect for this. But
if they had a Pixar animated, you don't think it would have felt a little bit Roger Rabbit?
I mean, they have animated stuff in here too. So it doesn't feel like it would have stuck out that much, but at the same time, I imagine the reason why they wouldn't do such a thing is just because they wouldn't have the budget to do that very well. And it would probably add some extra confusion when you're trying to cut back and forth between Harry Shum Jr. in real life and Harry Shum Jr. as a cartoon.
Yeah.
But I mean, having, you know, Randy Newman in there as the voice of the raccoon is a reference. So that's something too.
To be fair, I didn't even notice Randy Newman. There were so many other things filling my brain at that moment that I was just, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Were you just like in awe at that point? And you were just like, sure, why not?
Pretty much. You're just like, okay, I'm still with you, I guess. You haven't lost me. You haven't done anything to push me away. But all right, man. You really went there, Raccoon Cooney. Because when you see over the shoulder her competing teppanyaki chef just going to town over there, and she's like, oh boy, he's really good. You're just like, oh, this is clearly a weird universe where she's a teppanyaki chef and like that guy's really good. You should not be allowed to put so many hats on your other hats and have it still work.
You shouldn't be allowed to put so many hats on your raccoons.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just the one tall hat.
It's good. It works. It's good. It could have not worked. It could have been bad. That's for sure.
I mean, if it didn't have the extremely serious and very emotional performances from the main cast, yeah, the rest of this probably just would have been chalked up as like, well, you know, that was weird. And then you go about your day, but, you know, it's a very like honest and touching movie that, you know, when I told Amanda about it, she's like, yeah, I don't know what this movie is about, but I saw on Facebook that one of my friends watched it and cried or something. I was like, okay, yeah, there, you know, there's emotions and stuff in here, and it can get to you if you can get through the rest of the stuff that's here too.
That's a lie. A vicious lie. I didn't post on Facebook.
Did you have a tear?
I may have cried profusely when I saw this in a movie theater.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Let it be known on this day, what is it, October, Joe admits to having emotions.
I cry in movies all the time.
Do you
really? Yeah. But it's not usually germane to the kinds of, like, I didn't cry in Time Cop, I'm sorry to say. But not usually germane to our discussions.
It's just you know, when, like, this movie, when Spock dies, that other time, Kirk dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when that kind of stuff.
When Bing Bong dies in the Pixar movie, Richard Kind is the voice of Bing Bong.
Well, yeah, which movie is that?
I don't know. Heads Up, Think Smart, whatever it is, the brain one.
with the feelings as the little characters.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that one.
Yeah, it's fine.
I was about to Google Bing Bong, but that wasn't going to come up with anything.
Yeah, well.
Bing Bong and IMDb.
He's a pink elephant creature thing of the character's imagination.
Okay.
Just imagine that made me sad enough to cry, Dan.
Wow. Pink elephant Bing Bong.
All right. So, but the other thing about this movie is I also felt like when I saw it in the movie theater, I was like, wow, this is why I do what I do. This is why I'm out there saving lives every day.
It reinvigorated your love of the business.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't last long.
No.
Because everybody...
Jaded by Monday morning again?
Yeah, because everybody's making crap. That's just how that goes. But for a brief shining moment, it was like, this is people who ostensibly seem to like what they're doing, and they made something good.
Yeah, I had a moment today, in fact, where I was rotating around a 3D viewport around a 3D model of a paper bowl. And I was like, you know what?
A paper bowl?
What is my life right now? Yeah, I'll show you. I took a screenshot of it because I had a moment where I was just like, what is occurring here? What is my life right now? Actually, can I just drag this right into the...
Sure. Drag it right in. Drag it into the Skype.
There you go. I found myself there. and I was just like, yeah.
It just looks like a pie plate. Or you know what it is? It's one of those paper, the cardboard bowls that like a Swanson chicken pot pie frozen dinner comes in.
It's like a little Dixie paper bowl.
Oh, maybe, you know what? It's probably just a gray Fong shading with that specular highlight that's making me think of that dull foil.
The pseudo like microwave ready but not quite metal kind of thing that they got going on.
Yeah, you read one of the Swanson frozen chicken pot pies, turkey pot pies?
Yeah. We did the Marie Callender's ones where you sort of open up the sides and microwave it like in the box.
Oh no. Dan, you have to put the Swanson ones, you have to put them into your oven for like an hour and 10 minutes or something, are the instructions.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. No.
And then you take it out and then it's so molten hot that you should not eat it for probably 20 minutes, but you won't do that because you've been waiting an hour to eat your convenience food.
Yeah.
And so then you burn the crap out of your mouth.
You know, I still see, you know, probably once every 2 years, but I do still see the Swanson's truck, you know, with those like, it looks like the dog catcher truck with all those like doors and latches on the outside that are just the little freezers where they go door to door delivering frozen things to people.
That's not real.
It is. You've never seen the Swanson's truck?
No.
Oh, my friend.
It's like a milkman, but for frozen dinners.
Yeah, it's like you can have a subscription to it or whatever. Oh, here we go. It looks like, it looks like this. Here, I'll send you this picture on
the original Blue Apron.
How do you find images on Google anymore? Jesus. Thanks for that, Google. Incredible.
The real trick is trying to get the URL for the image or to copy the image and not get just like the page because you don't want the page.
I can't just like download an image anymore.
No. See what I've done?
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
What just happened here? Oh, it kind of worked.
Are you trying to send malware to me? What's going on? Why is it a file?
Just click the... I don't know. Oh, this isn't Swanson's. It's Schwann's. Excuse me. But I think Swanson's has something else similar.
Okay.
Maybe.
Oh. Was it Schwann or Swanson? I thought it was Swanson.
I think they're competitors. But you've never seen this truck driving around with all of the different frozen food compartments, like stopping in front of people's houses?
Literally never in my life.
Well, come out to the suburbs, my friend. This and the Sparklets truck delivering 5 gallon bottles of water to the doorsteps of people's houses.
Yeah. It's
things from the 90s that shouldn't still exist, basically.
Well, I'm sure that the frozen food truck probably predates that from the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Milkman.
No, I mean, I never even had a milkman when, when I was a kid, you'd see that in cartoons still. But you wouldn't have any concept of really that occurring because there weren't people driving around with like refrigerated trucks stopping to hand out things.
No, not here either. I think the entire concept of milk delivery doesn't fly in Arizona, but that's a separate issue.
Wait, what is the concept of milk delivery in Arizona? Why is the state different than any other state?
Oh, it's just too hot here to deliver dairy.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if your grocery store is more than 10 minutes away, your groceries are going to spoil in the summertime.
Ugh. Yeah, sometimes Jason will insist on us taking a cooler with us when we go to the grocery store. Yeah.
It's extremely embarrassing, but at a certain point, like that's kind of what you need to do.
Well, it's not just the embarrassment. I don't like having to sort out the stuff that needs to be put into the cooler afterwards and then re-put it back into the bags to take it up the stairs when we get home. I don't enjoy it. But I also don't typically do it unless it's like 5 million degrees and I'm getting like ice cream or something.
But like, how do you buy it? Do you like when it goes down the conveyor belt, do you take it out and then put it right back in the cooler? Like, do you put it back in the cooler and then do you ask them for like a half a dozen like empty bags to use to transport? Or are you in a full reusable bag economy here in the backseat of your car?
Well, time was we were a fully reusable bag household. And then with COVID and uncertainty about like sanitizing food surfaces and get groceries or whatever for like 5 minutes. There was that dip where no one was using reusable bags. And then people started using reusable bags again. But at that point, I would forget to bring them with me. So usually out of guilt, We would get paper if possible. And then, which speaking as someone who would bag groceries is the worst thing you can say to a bagger because it's the most labor intensive part of it for them. But
I don't even know if our grocery store offers paper anymore. I haven't seen it in forever. I know it usually like slots it underneath there on the back, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have those very thick and dense, quote unquote, reusable plastic bags that they give you. Now, instead of the thin, flimsy, this will be in the ocean in 2 seconds bags, like they do in Florida. And I think you guys still have the thin, flimsy ones too.
In terms of the plastic bags that they give you?
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're the extremely flimsy, see-through ones, basically.
Yeah. So we don't have those here anymore. So if you get plastic here, they give them to you in these like more dense than contractor bags. Which is extremely wasteful to collect those. You really just want to not have them. So I try to rely on the reusable. They do charge you 10 cents for those.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and they also charge for paper too. But the reusable, they don't charge you for. And Whole Foods, at least used to, I don't know if it still does, gives you a 10 cent credit for bringing it instead of a penalty. But yeah, that's it's going to save you a ton of money at a Whole Foods market. But the important part about this is that I don't bring the cooler into the grocery store with me. The cooler stays in the car.
Interesting.
I bring the groceries to the car and then I put the groceries into the cooler. But I also put stuff on the conveyor belt in the order that I would like it to be bagged, which...
Oh, yeah. People who don't sort on the conveyor belt are monsters.
Yeah. Well, not everybody in this household really considers those things. But at the same time, despite my best efforts, sometimes it'll just all be slid or thrown down to the end of the thing and then just jammed in there wherever. So then you got to go like hunt for whatever the frozen items are and take them and put them into the cooler.
The cold stuff goes into as few cold bags as possible because they keep each other cold. And then also you take those into the house first. Like you gotta sort.
Yeah. Well, that's why I will sort them when I get to the car. If I have the cooler, then I'll do that.
Oh, dear.
But my preference, of course, is, especially if I'm bagging, is all the cold stuff together, and the colder the better together. But you just can't always get what you want, as Mick Jagger said, I guess.
You got you correct.
Yeah. I had a brief moment where I was like, that was him, right? But anyway, it's not usually hot enough to warrant the cooler in most cases because I can get home fast enough in this climate that it's not an issue. We're not usually in the triple digits, but in Florida, it's weird because they'll give you a bag of ice if you order like fish or something at the counter. They'll just be like, "Here is your bag of ice to go with it," and it's just like, "Wow, that's helpful," I guess. Because
they just give you a bag of ice. I feel like you would go broke doing that in a hot place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you're still... I don't think they're running it as a charity when they're doing that. But it is convenient, for sure, because then you don't have a stinky, slimy, gross salmon when you get home to my mom's. But the... it's neither here nor there, really, because that's just coolers to keep you cool. Cool as a cucumber. And you know who was cool as a cucumber? The people making this movie, that's for sure. They definitely weren't tense about it. And we're
cool as a meat cucumber, aka a hot dog.
Yes.
Hot dog's basically a meat cucumber, right?
Yeah. Cool as a meat cucumber, basically a hot dog. Sure.
Oh, sorry, were you typing that down or are you just like actually saying it to verify?
Oh, yeah, both. I wanted to verify it as I was writing it because I needed to record that for a title suggestion from you. But is there anything else to really say about the film? I mean, because we can exhaustively describe parts of it that we like, but I want to make sure we get the broad strokes done with. I feel like it's just a movie that's very enjoyable. Yeah. You should go enjoy, marinate
it. It's extremely silly, intermixed with very like honest emotion, not in a way that dilutes either of those two things. Like the silliness is not diluted by the emotion, and the emotion is not diluted by the seriousness. It's very strange. They just sort of like weave back and forth between the two. And you should watch it and give it a shot when you are able to dedicate 2 hours to staring in mm-hmm. one direction and not holding a telephone.
I thought they broke up.
You know, they'll probably get back together at some point for a reunion tour. Like, who could resist the money?
Sure. One thing, you didn't mention Stephanie Hsu.
Of course.
Who was Jobu Tupaki. This is the first time I recall seeing her, although she's supposedly been in stuff I've seen before, but I don't think in as large of a role.
Wow. Unacceptable.
Sorry. I just didn't see SpongeBob the musical and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, although I know a lot of people did watch that.
But, I like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
She's very good in this, and apparently that was... she wasn't originally cast for that role, but I like her little take on it. I like her whole lesbian vibe that she's got going on with all this, and she still manages to, you know, like have the funny stuff, have the evil funny stuff, have the romance, have the daughter like anger stuff and mm-hmm. sadness. It all works. There is a moment at the end of the film where I'm just like, so is this joy again now in this moment after this movie is over, or is this Jobu as joy? Because Jobu had said that she's inseparable from joy in all realities, and when she was crying at the car in that last scene at the laundromat where she's, you know, going to leave, in that moment she references that her mother could be anywhere doing anything and all this stuff. And why would she choose to be here? So it seems like it's still Jobu then.
Although she doesn't do the multiverse merge with her really prior to that. Maybe it's because we're jumping between a couple of very, very similar, universes, but yeah, it seems like she didn't, take over the original universe joy, but, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how it all shakes out at the end. But it was just interesting and sort of like a thought experiment of like, because it's not the reality the movie starts in, or at least it's not the one that we go to with the first IRS office, because it gets split off from there. It is interesting to think about, like, they chose something that is not that far off from what things could be, or what they could have been, in a way. And, I don't know. It was interesting. And I guess we didn't talk about the biggest acting performance, the breakout role of the year, which was the two rocks on the cliff.
one with googly eyes.
Yeah. I don't know how that played in your living room, but when I was in the movie theater, we were all very spaced out because I made sure to get a screening that didn't have that many people in it. But the place was dead silent when we first cut to the whole like desert thing. And there's the subtitles going on screen of the rocks talking to each other without speaking, and just like that, you know, eerie, windy silence. Mm-hmm. And then everybody just starts laughing along with the ha ha ha's in the text from the rocks. The written dialogue was entertaining enough that people were won over by it.
And it's funny, and you can't believe they're getting away with what they're trying to do here.
No, and then you super can't believe it when they cut back to the googly eyes version of the rocks moving around in the version of reality where life never came to be. Which I don't know how they first jump into something that's not them, really from that, but it was, I don't care. Cause it was just so good, having the two rocks to talk to each other.
I mean, because like a rock can't eat a tube of chapstick or something.
No, how would she be her mother in a situation where they are rocks?
You mean has a rock give birth to another rock?
Yeah, and how would she exist as a rock?
You know, chip off the old block, literally, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, That's one way to do it, but I just how does it work? How does that work with rocks? I don't know.
Well, when a man rock falls in love with a woman rock in China,
they get their rocks off.
Oh, we should have ended the show before that happened. they get their rocks off.
Children, cover your ears, please.
We can't use that, but I'm gonna.
No, I mean, we also didn't talk about the dildos, or the ball gag, or the whatever that tickle thing is, in the sex dungeon. That one of the two directors is the owner of the sex dungeon.
Oh, okay. I saw the cameo of the director. I was like, where was this guy? Like, yeah, he was sex dungeon guy, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the other director was the guy who got his face ripped off by the bagel. So that was something.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Imagine casting yourself in the movie as a sex dungeon owner, in a movie that you're writing. Just being like, this is for me. This is my job.
Yeah, you would be at the premiere watching it with your family, and that would happen, and then they would all just turn and look at you and go, hey, you know, it's a movie. Art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll never believe what people do for art. And on that note,
go watch the movie, people. It's fun.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why anyone would listen to this entire discussion and then be like, you know, I would check it out, but they spoiled it. Because, like, you should have just figured out that you should go watch the movie.
We couldn't possibly spoil it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been tweeting about it so much and telling people to go watch it, so just do it.
Oh, have you been using Twitter.com?
I did. In fact, one of the directors retweeted me.
Oh, see, look at you.
Yeah, because I tweeted about the movie. I did the super fave thing, but instead of the little stars, I did all the little things.
The eyeballs.
Eyeballs. I did a rock. I did the raccoon. I did raccoon. You know, little references to people who get it. Wink. And I put that out there. Hot dog. There was a hot dog too. Hot dog emoji.
Hot dog's good. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So everyone, go be with your loved ones in this time of despair. Don't give up. Because everybody loves somebody sometimes.
Love the one you're with. No, that song is about infidelity. Sorry.
Okay.
I don't hear a lot of pro-infidelity song, but that's certainly one of them.
It's really not that crazy.
We're not that crazy.
A couple of mammals making gravy.
Right?
Together, you and me, a multi-species team, we're a family. Culinarily. Now we're cooking while nobody's looking. Yeah, we're family. Culinarily.
Raccoonie, I don't know what I'd do without you.
Yeah, we make a pretty good team.
Damn right.